Good morning. As part of our series on expanding our understanding of world religions, I have an opening reading from the cultures of Taoism and Confucianism, titled The Space Within by Liao Tse. 30 spokes share the wheel's hub. It is the center hole that makes it useful. Shape clay into a vessel. It's the space within that makes it useful. Cut doors and windows in a room, and it's the holes that make it useful. Therefore, profit comes from what is there, usefulness from what is not there. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. My name is Tom Phillips, and I'm happy to be your convener today. The program will be offered by Jessica Sievers, and I'll introduce her a little bit later. And at this point, we will go with the lighting of our chalice, and Destiny has agreed to do that. And we borrow from the UUA lexicon. We light this chalice to celebrate the inherent worth and dignity of every person, to reaffirm the historic pledge of liberal religion to seek that justice which transcends mere legality and moves towards the resolution of true equality, and three, to share that love which is ultimately beyond even our cherished reason, that love which unites us. We will begin, stand as you're able, to sing hymn 186, Grieve Not Your Heart. In the green hymnal. Is this gray? I'm sorry. Thank you. Please be seated. This is the time in our service when we have announcements, and I draw your attention to the order of worship, where announcements are published on the third page inside and also with an insert. And I also was one that's not printed in the program is that we will be having at First United Methodist Church here in Manhattan on today at 3 o'clock. Negro Spiritual Concert by Dr. Laverne L. Baker, folk singer, accompanied by Mary Caudle Kidd, pianist. And that's at 3 o'clock. Sure to be good music there. I bring your attention particularly to the insert. Does everybody have an insert? Okay. One side has 10 billion beats. Be sure to read that. But something very, very new for UUFM is odd. Repeat after me. Odd. One more time. Odd. Okay. It stands for Action Wednesday Dinner. The board thought that was really cool, but maybe not. Maybe it has to catch on. Anyway, it's a new thing that's going to begin the first Wednesday of every month. It's open to everybody, children, young and old, all of us, okay? Starting at 6 o'clock, it is a potluck in the true sense of the word. The only thing you can count on for sure is we will provide simple beverages and dinnerware, okay? Bring something to share, and we'll see how it goes. We'll eat at 6, and then at 7, we will break for meetings of committees. The idea here is it's going to meet one of our visionary agenda items of having a green sanctuary and practicing environmental stewardship. So people who would normally have committee meetings once a month, we ask that you have it on the first Wednesday of every month. Pretty cool, huh? That way we don't have maybe 5 or 6 different committee meetings coming where they turn the air conditioning down or the heat up or whatever, leave lights on, things like that. So we can have food, we can have fellowship, and we can have a little bit of action, you know, and that's really all we're looking for. How many people are on a committee here in New York? Raise those hands high. That is awesome. Okay. So enough of that. Now comes the time in our service when we have joys and concerns. And if I could have a mic. Oh, okay. Kathleen has the mic. Anything.
Stacy Brofman. I guess I have a joy and a concern. The concern is I married that guy, but
that's a concern.
The joy is that a couple of weeks ago, Tom and I had the opportunity to go back to Albuquerque and see my folks, and I was able to stand up with them as they renewed their vows for their 59th wedding anniversary. And then talking about religions, that morning there was a forecast for rain, and she wanted to do it out in their backyard. And so she told her God that morning that she knew she'd been praying for rain for weeks and weeks, but if he could just hold off until the evening. And if there is a God, he did. And it was a beautiful ceremony.
William.
I got stitches in my hand.
Can we see them? Ooh.
Well, I would like to welcome Terry Becerra back to the fellowship. She was gone for the last 2-3 years, and now she is back. We are welcoming her. Please stand up, Terry.
Today, my grandma and grandpa came to my house because she wanted to come to our house.
All right.
Scary. Thank you. Yeah, I can't top that one. All right, for over 30 years, you've been hearing me say, my school, Fort Riley Middle School, well, it's just been nominated by, or won by the American Association of Principals, the number one middle school in the nation.
Wow. Anybody else? Okay. Thank you so much. So, next will be an offering by the choir, titled Already Home, by that famous guy, Andrew Lloyd Webber.
True. You simply live a dream.
Actually, no. We're not going to do it. Okay. These words for the offertory from the UUA. Freely have we received of gifts that minister to our needs of body and spirit. Gladly we bring to our church and its wide concerns a portion of this bounty. Music from Slavomir. What about the kids' story? Okay. Who's doing that? Oh, gosh.
Children of all ages. Remember to make a list and check it twice.
Hey guys, my name is Tom. Hi. Okay. Okay, who knows what a myth is? Okay, what's a myth?
A myth is some people believe God is a myth.
Okay, very good. Good answer. Bright green shirt. Nick, yeah, sorry. I know you. Okay, something that some people believe and some people think is not real. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes it helps describe things like God, and not everybody believes in that, or what's going on in the rainbow. Does anybody know what story the song is that the choir sang? They were talking about going home, and I'll tell you what, it's a girl named Dorothy who's really singing it. What story do you think it is? What is it, Kyla? Kaya?
Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz. Now, that's not the Wizard of Oz I grew up with. But this guy, Andrew Lloyd Webber, he knows how to make music. So that's kind of a myth, you know, like, where is your home? You know, somewhere over the rainbow, I'm going to find all this good stuff. Yeah. Yeah, mythology is the study of myths. Whenever you hear the ending ology, it's like study of, okay? And there are people who actually make a living studying that. And then we've had a lot of mythology in the history of humans up until the time we could write things down. So there are myths that were passed down by words. Okay, so I'm going to read a story about one of the most well-known myths that we have, and it's called the Garden of Eden. Has anybody ever heard of this story? Has anybody ever heard of Garden of Eden? Who are the main two human characters in the Garden of Eden? Nick. Adam and Eve. Any other characters in this story? Jake. No? Kaya. Go ahead. Take a shot. There's a snake. Nick, there's probably another really big, powerful one, too. God. All right. So we've established that it's a story about a garden, and there's two main human characters, Adam and Eve. So let me see the place that I did have marked very nicely before my paperclip fell out. And this has got some really nice pictures. So I'm going to read first because I can't do two things at once. Then I'm going to show you the pictures. Okay. At the very beginning of the world, the earth was a dry and dusty place, where nothing could live and nothing could grow. So God made a mist which watered the ground all over. There's a mist, okay? Don't look at my hand, look at the mist, okay. Then, with God's great hands, he formed the first man out of the clay of the newly watered earth. He breathed the breath of life into the man's nostrils, so that he became a warm, living soul. God gave him a name, Nick, Adam, which means earth. Okay, here are those big hands of God, And Adam kind of looks like a baby in a womb, maybe, if you've seen pictures of that. And so we got all the mist over here on this side, and God just took up a bunch of dirt, right? And then blew life into his nostrils. Okay. In a place called Eden, God planted a garden for Adam. It was full of plants that were beautiful to look at and good to eat. In the middle of the garden stood a fountain. Two great trees grew nearby. Now, if you really know the story, you can name those trees for me. Look, I had to read it again to remember all this stuff. two great trees nearby, the tree of knowledge on one side and the tree of life on the other. So in this photo, we have this beautiful garden. It's not a photo, it's a drawing. I'm sorry. We did not have the Google Cam there at the time. But eventually, I should try the GPS coordinates and see what comes up. But so there's a tree, the fountain's in the middle. You guys should look at this book later. Okay, so God, you know, didn't say too much because he was pretty laid back, but he did do one thing. God warned Adam, you may eat anything you like, except the fruits from the tree of knowledge and the tree of life. If you eat them, you will die. The Garden of Eden was beautiful. The scent of blossom filled the air. Succulent fruits and berries ripened in the sunshine. Adam was happy to tend the garden as God had asked him to do. Adam loved the garden, but he was lonely. So God set out making creatures of every kind, the mighty and the meek, the sleek and the scaly, the spotted and the feathered, dappled and striped. Some crept, some slithered, some hopped, some swam, some flew. Adam named them, every one. Okay, who can name some of the things you see in that picture? Jake, name me something. What has stripes?
Tiger.
There's a tiger, yeah? Yes.
The zebra kind of looks like it has stripes.
Zebra, okay. Chalice lighter? What? Giraffe? I'm not good with names. There is a giraffe. What's the guy over here with a tusk and a long kind of gray? Yeah. Elephants. In the back row. What else do you see? Elephant. That's cool. Okay.
Flamingo.
Where's the flamingo? Over here? Coast of the guy? Oh, yeah. Okay. What color is the flamingo?
Pink.
Everybody got that? Do you know how a flamingo eats? We'll talk about that later. Anyway. Kaya. Absolutely. You've been to the right kind of zoo. If you don't feed them that pink-colored food, they eat food that gives them the pink color. I've been to places where they don't give them that pink food and they're white. Yeah, you guys know a lot of stuff. That's right. It's kind of upside down. And when they're upside down, their mouth looks like a smile. So we call it the flamingo smile. And they actually filter food through there. God is amazing. Anyway. Okay, laying an egg. That's another story. Let's keep going on this one here. Okay. So remember, he had all of these animals, but still he was kind of lonely. Okay. So God sent Adam into a deep sleep. And a dreaming sleep. While Adam dreamed, God took some bone out of his body. Who knows this one? A rib. Right there. Okay. This is too exciting. Let's see. A rib and closed him up again. Wow. Sterile procedures, I guess. God turned the rib from Adam into a woman, okay? The perfect partner for Adam. Again, the woman was the perfect partner for Adam. Where is she? Anyway. she was called Eve, which means mother of all things. Now, some medical professional somewhere told me that men have one less rib than women. Does anybody know? Is this true? Or is that an urban legend? Do women have one? It's a myth. Dang, I thought there was something to substantiate this. Okay. But that's what a myth is all about. It's just a story, right? Okay. So did I show you that? This is Adam is dreaming, and Eve is the one with the eyes open and the lighter colored skin. Okay? Okay. It's for a family audience, all right? Okay. Everybody cool with that? All right. So Adam's just sleeping there. It's pretty cool. Okay, now Adam and Eve looked after their magical garden together. They lived peacefully with the animals. They sang and they danced and they played, and sometimes they simply stood quietly and gazed at the beauty of it all. They never, ever tasted the fruit from the forbidden tree. Okay, this is them playing music, playing with animals, having a good time. Okay? All right. So life sounds really, really great. But then, one bright day, as Eve sat alone in the shade of the tree of knowledge, the serpent appeared beside her. Serpent is another name for snake. "I expect God told you not to eat the fruit of this tree, hasn't he?" the serpent said. Eve replied, "We can eat everything else, but if we eat the fruit from this tree, God says we'll die." "Die? You won't die!" The serpent crept closer to Eve and whispered, "The fruit from these two trees will open your eyes and make you wise like a god. Wouldn't you like that?" Okay, so here's Eve kind of starry-eyed talking to this snake, all right? Okay, where's the snake? The snake is going around the tree here. So you see the spots? The snake has spots in this picture. He's slinking around the tree. I remember a song when I was a child, "Around that tree old Satan slunk." Anybody know that one? You didn't go to the same, you went to the same church camp I did. Okay. It's a really good kid song, actually, about that. So you know where my visions are coming from. All right. Okay, so that happened. So die, wouldn't you like that? So anyway, the serpent melted away into the shadows. This is what happens with guys like that. And Eve was alone again. Eve looked at the fruit of the tree of knowledge. Would it really make her wise, you know, smart? It smelled sweet. Eve reached out her hand. The fruit was perfectly ripe. She picked the fruit and bit into its fleshy juicy flesh. When Adam came back hot and thirsty, he was probably working out or something, they ate the forbidden fruit together. As soon as Adam and Eve had eaten the fruit, they looked at each other. And for the first time, they felt shy. Do you know what it means to feel shy? Kind of like, I'm a little embarrassed. They quickly found fig leaves and covered themselves up. Here they are covering themselves up with leaves, because they'd been naked before that. They weren't shy about anything. They were the only people there, and except for God hanging out and the snake watching them, you know. So then they heard a voice calling them. Guess who that was? No, snake already had his turn. It's the big guy. God. It was God walking in the cool garden. Now that reminds me of another story. Everybody knows I'm taking too much time here. Sorry, Jessica. God's real name? It's Andy. You know why? Can you sing a few bars? Andy walks with me and he talks, tells me I am the one. Okay. I'm being a little bit irreverent here, okay? So let's get back on track. So he heard, and God was walking. This is where the song comes from. So this myth really has a lot of impact on our society. Adam and Eve felt ashamed and hid from him in the bushes. Okay. When God saw Adam and Eve hiding, he guessed that they had done something wrong. Why else would you hide from your father, right? He told them to come out from their hiding place. God asked Adam, "Did you eat the forbidden fruit?" "I did," said Adam. "But it was Eve who made me do it." The grown-ups appreciate that, maybe the men. "Did you, Eve?" asked God. "I did," said Eve, "but only because the serpent persuaded me to." Okay, so kick it back to the serpent. All right. God was very angry. "Because of what you have done," he said to the serpent, looking at the serpent, "I am going to make you the most miserable creature on earth. You will slither everywhere on your body, and you will eat nothing but dust." Then God turned to Adam and Eve. "Now you will learn what it is to be sad as well as happy." Because you gave up the happiness stuff. "You will work your fingers to the bone, growing food to eat and raising your children. And when you die, you will return to the earth from which you were made." Remember, Adam was made out of dust. So he says they're going to go back to dust. Here's that serpent. I think he's pretty good looking, actually. But looks can be deceiving, all right? Okay, God loved Adam and Eve as if they were his children, but he knew that he must send them away from the Garden of Eden. leave before you're tempted to eat the fruit from that other tree, the tree of life, he said. You are mortal now and cannot live forever. God gave Adam and Eve warm clothes to wear. He handed them some seeds and cuttings from the garden. Then he sent them out into the world. So that is perhaps one of the most well-known myths of our society. And today the grown-ups are going to talk about myths and religions, and the middle school students are welcome to stay here, are asked to stay here, actually, and the rest of you guys go to RE. And when we do this, we sing a song that starts with a certain note. Go now in peace, go now in peace, may the Spirit. Okay, William is taking the flame with him to RE. Thank you so much, William. All right, now, just in case you didn't hear it the first time, words that go to the offertory that are very appropriate before a famous Chopin piece. Freely have we received of gifts that minister to our needs of body and spirit. Gladly we bring to our church and its wide concerns a portion of this bounty. Our speaker today is Jessica Sievers. I'm in the right order, right? Okay. With the title Power of Myth, Jessica, you know, in The Wizard of Oz, they would go over all this. So Jessica is a recent graduate of Washburn University, and you grew up in this fellowship pretty much, maybe. Okay, but anyway, you're from Wamego and the general area, and we know you well. And so take it away, Jessica. Would you like to?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, let's do that. This heavy. Okay. Very good.
Good morning. Can everybody hear me okay? All right. Like Tom said, my name is Jessica Sievers, and today I'm going to talk about Joseph Campbell, a little bit about religion, a little more about mythology. And before I begin, I'll tell you how I got here today. I grew up living across the street from a church. The only times I stepped foot inside that church was during tornado season. My dad's laughing. We only had a crawl space in our house, and that wasn't big enough for any of us, really. So when there was a tornado warning, my dad would hurry me across the street, usually in the dark, usually in pouring rain, usually in howling wind. And we would wait out the storm in the church's basement. Now that I think about it, living in Kansas, Tornado Alley, and associating church with tornadoes, it's a wonder you can get me to come to church at all. I'm joking about that part. I did go to various Christian church services with friends and other family members on occasion. I consider myself lucky that I was not conditioned into believing ideas such as, I was born a sinner. I have to repent for my sins. There is only one God. And if I don't choose the right God, I'm going to hell. I refuse to believe that an innocent child can be born into the wrong religion and not knowing any better is going to hell. Why can't the big religion question have multiple correct answers? Like Tom said, I have a bachelor's degree of science in biology and now in nursing. I'm a scientific person. I believe in evolution. I think what science can't explain, we just don't understand yet, or you can chalk it up to a higher power, miracles, and such. In college, mainly at Washburn, I spent much energy trying to figure out what my religion was and what my beliefs were. I worried over ruling out everything it wasn't, rather than enjoying everything it was and just letting it be. Then I was talking with my dad and talking with my dad, different occasions. He pointed me in a direction, and that's kind of why I'm here today. I watched Joseph Campbell's PBS documentary, The Power of Myth. And as soon as I return it to the local library, you can check it out too. So I'll start with a quote that Mr. Campbell used from William H. McNeil. A society that does not have a myth to support and give it coherence goes into dissolution. Interesting word, myth. And religion, or is it myth or religion? You may have your own religion. You may consider other stories of creation to be myths, but those myths just might be someone else's religion. So this worked out quite serendipitously with Tom reading The Garden of Eden, because I was talking with my mom, and she said, the story goes, woman was made from one of Adam's ribs. But did you know, this is a scientific fact, if you remove a rib and you keep the periosteum, that membrane around the rib, intact, and you allow that to heal, that rib will grow back. Myth. So one of my favorite quotes from Joseph Campbell I've come across thus far, which is also on the front of your service today. If you follow your bliss, you put yourself on a kind of track that has been there all the while, waiting for you. And the life you ought to be living is the one you are living. So here's a photo of Mr. Campbell. I got this information from the Joseph Campbell Foundation website, or jcf.org. Joseph John Campbell was born on March 26, 1904, in White Plains, New York. Joe was the first child of a middle-class Roman Catholic Irish couple, Charles and Josephine. When he was seven, his father took him to see Buffalo Bill's Wild West show. Joe later wrote, he became fascinated, seized, obsessed by the figure of an American Indian with his ear to the ground, a bow and arrow in his hand, and a look of special knowledge in his eyes. After he received his Master's of Arts from Columbia University, he studied at the University of Paris and then traveled to Germany to resume his studies at the University of Munich. During his time in Europe, Joe was exposed to modernists whose art and insights would greatly influence his work. We have Bordel, Picasso, Paul Klee, James Joyce, Thomas Mann, Sigmund Freud, and Carl Jung, to name a few. These encounters would eventually lead him to theorize that all myths are the creative products of the human psyche, that artists are culture's myth makers, and that mythologies are creative manifestations of humankind's universal need to explain psychological, social, cosmological, and spiritual realities. In January 1932, he pondered his future in this journal entry. I want to justify my existence, and continue to be obsessed with the notion that I've got to do something for humanity. Well, teaching ought to quell that obsession, and if I ever get around to an intelligent view of matters, intelligent criticism of contemporary values ought to be useful to the world. This gets back again to Krishna's dictum. The best way to help mankind is through the perfection of yourself. In 1934, he accepted a position in the literate department at Sarah Lawrence College, and he remained there for 38 years. Some of his other works that are well known: The Hero with a Thousand Faces, The Power of Myth, Mythos, The Masks of God, Myths to Live By, and the incomplete, because he passed away, Historical Atlas of World Mythology. Campbell talks about the Book of the 24 Philosophers written in about the 12th century. And he says, this book says, God is an intelligible sphere, as in known to the mind, whose center is everywhere and circumference is nowhere. And I paralleled this to him talking about the Navajo. They identify a physical location on the earth to symbolize the place of emergence where humans came up from the earth. And this place is identified for their rituals. The center is where you are. So from John Neihardt's book, Black Elk Speaks, Black Elk said he was standing on the sacred central mountain of the world. But the central mountain is everywhere. It's right where you are. And thus the Holy Land is everywhere. It's not some place you need to go to. You create it right here. So we're going to try to do a video clip so that you can have the pleasure of seeing Joseph Campbell in action.
Joe was once asked, what does that have to do with anything? By a man who said that his life was perfectly happy without ever considering. the abyssal dark, out of which all things come back to which they go. And when appearances emerge, they break into pairs of opposites. This is all basic mythological stuff that we find in India. The sun rises here. It's the place of birth, of emergence, new life. When the Buddha achieved illumination, he was facing east. The New Testament is the testament of Sunday, the rising of the new eastern sun. Then in the height of the sky, the blue sky of noon, this is the midpoint, the 35th year of life. Then the west, where the sun sinks, and then the north, where the sun is going underground. In the north, there's always an area of awe, mystery, danger, the danger of that which has not been accommodated in the forms of the social order. And then, so we see the sun in these various aspects. Now, all of these mandalas that I'm going to be showing will be open to the east. Not closed, open to receive the transpersonal, the transcendent light shining through. All things are to be transparent to transcendence. When a deity like Yahweh in the Old Testament says, I'm final, he is no longer transparent to transcendence. He is not, as the deities of the older cultures, a personification of an energy which antecedes his personification. He says, I'm it. And when the deity closes himself like that, we too are closed like that. So we're not open to transcendence either. And you have a religion of worship. Whereas when the deity opens, you have a religion of identification with the divine. And that was what Christ mentioned when he said, I and the Father are one, and he was crucified for it.
So Campbell says, all things are to be transparent to transcendence. That's the main message I got out of that clip. We started a little earlier than I wanted, but that was perfectly fine. I think I like hearing the story of the Native Americans. Yeah, it's okay. Doug's been great today. This one? Yeah, that's fine. So Campbell talks about Jane Goodall and her studying the chimpanzees. And she noticed that they had a particular behavior during a thunderstorm. And most of the males normally go around showing off and have these great displays of force and power towards each other because they're trying to figure out who is the alpha male, who's the toughest guy in this bunch, and who's the leader. And she noticed one time when it was raining that as soon as that lightning struck and the thunder clapped, they all went berserk, showing the same behavior. And they're challenging that noise, that cacophony, that startle. They know that there's something out there that's bigger than they are, and they're going to challenge it. So perhaps humans, you know, their first concept of power that they could not explain maybe was lightning and the noise of the thunder. So this tool is what Joseph Campbell believes to be one of the first pieces of evidence of human spirituality that we can find. This is about 6 to 8 inches, which would be larger than what would be useful for hunting or carving up meat or digging up vegetables and whatnot. And Robinson Jeffers, a poet from California, said this this term, divinely superfluous beauty. You know, it was found on the banks of the Thames River And it must have had some sort of spiritual context or a ritual that was associated with it, with eating or with meat or something, because it's too perfect to be a useful tool. You know, it's not just some little rock that they carried around and banged on things, and it's not damaged by anything. It was perhaps something that was sacred. And then you get to the era of the Homo sapiens, and you really do have that first evidence of mythological thinking or perhaps religious thinking with burials, because we find that the remains were buried, we're talking about 60,000 years BC, with a jawbone of a boar. Perhaps that was a sacrificial offering. The bodies were curled up in a fetal position, perhaps symbolizing the return to the womb. Later, they found in another location a male that was buried with flowers on top. And they know there were flowers on top because they have the evidence of the pollen grains from medicinal plants. You know, also from worshiping cave bear skulls that they found in the Alps of Switzerland, these whole caches of cave bear skulls. The hunters of old time had a system of belief that the animal has an equal their life is equal to the human, no less, no more, and that you live by killing. And they believed that if they revered and respected these animals, that the animal was willing to sacrifice itself, and then it would come back next year. So this whole replenishing thought, you know, maybe that's the beginning of their spirituality and whatnot. And then one last thing I wanted to touch on, I'm running out of time here. In this depiction from mythology, Greek or Roman, I'm sorry, Athens, 5th century. We have Thetis and Peleus, the parents of Achilles. And here we see the serpent, several of them. One is biting between the eye, and that is symbolizing opening the inner vision. One serpent is biting under the ear, and that symbolizes opening the ear to the music of the universe. And then one is biting the Achilles heel, and this represents the dying ego becoming transparent to transcendence. So the serpent, there's also a lion, usually there's the sun in a lot of mythology, and the moon. And one thing I learned from Campbell's video was that the serpent or the snake sheds its skin to be born again, is how they interpret that. Women are attuned to the cycles of the moon. The moon sheds its shadow to be born again. And then on the other side, the complement, you have the sun. The sun is disengaged in time, but it has the same energy as the moon, the yin and yang that complete each other. And then another symbol for the sun is the lion. We find a lot of that represented in some of the artifacts that have been found. I think I'm going to stop there. We don't really have much time for discussion. So if anybody has a couple quick comments, something they want to share. We're keeping him busy today.
I want to thank you for a wonderful service. And I'm so glad that our middle schoolers were invited to stay here in the sanctuary and experience a bit of what we all get to experience every Sunday. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm very glad to hear this. In the 80s, I watched, I think he had a series on TV, and I recorded every one of them, read the books. And
that would be this collection here, The Power of Myth, on DVD, 6 hours.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Very influential in our life.
Thank you, Harriet.
Could you repeat the name of his website?
It's very simple. I just don't want to tell you wrong. Joseph Campbell Foundation, jcf.org. Mm-hmm. I think this will be our last comment before closing.
Okay. Jennifer, state your name.
Jennifer. I think it's true nature is at our core, because I had the luck or unluck to drive downtown yesterday morning at the same time they were ripping up the lovely shady trees downtown.
Not to get the last word, but his drawing he started out with that was Native American, right? With the opening of the sun. Anyway, did anybody see the Korean flag in that, in the yin and the yang? He did mention it's almost identical. I mean, if you go to Wikipedia, my ultimate source for any information, mythology, the first thing, they've got an animation of it coming apart, but it's from Eastern mythology, not from Native American. Okay.
So follow your bliss.
Okay, stand as you're able for the closing hymn, which has a number. 120. These glasses. 189 in the whatever color that is. Okay, these words also from UUA. Let us bless and keep one another. Let kindness rule in our hearts and compassion in our lives. Until we meet again, go in peace.